This is Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. Science, as many have said on this show over the years, is driven by collaboration and cooperation. Researchers review each other's proposals for new projects, get close-up views of confidential data before new results are published. But the FBI has been warning that this culture of openness is leaving U.S. research open to an unexpected consequence: theft and espionage. And new reporting from the New York Times this week revealed that dozens of research institutions are investigating individual scientists for potentially offering confidential intellectual property to China. Here to explain, the reporter who broke that story, Gina Colata, medical reporter for the New York Times. Always happy to talk to you, Gina.
It's great to talk to you, Ira. We go back a long time. It's the beginning of our careers.
It's a long time
ago.
No,
don't even mention it, right?
Yes. Well, unpack this story for us. Why are institutes so concerned about potential spying right now?
Well, I think they hadn't really even thought about this as an issue. As the administrator at the NIH said, he took them a while to even sort of grasp the fact that this was actually happening. And what happened was the FBI came to them in 2016 and said, we want to know how science works. And how does peer review work? What are the rules? What are the regulations? How does this all happen? And apparently they had somehow seen things that they thought might be disturbing, but they wanted to know what is required of scientists and how, if at all, are things shared. So this went on for a little while, and then the FBI and the NIH started identifying situations where it looked like there were transgressions. And from there, they tried to say, who are the scientists? So a lot of people say this is like they're attacking Chinese scientists. They said, no, we look for something that looks fishy, and then we look for the scientists. So the fact that they are Chinese seems to fit into a pattern in a way. But most ethnic Chinese in this country, like the vast majority, have nothing to do with this. This is a very few people, considering how many are out there. But what they're doing, when you look at what they've been passing along, it's hard to say, oh, it was no big deal, it's just an accident. It kind of wasn't.
For some of those cases that they
were investigating. Yeah, I mean, the things that they were...
Give me an example.
Okay. Well, you know, I always say, why do people keep putting things in emails, Ira? I mean, honestly, how many times have emails been just so damning for people? But, for example, they had one person who had a confidential research proposal that he or she was reviewing, and it is a felony to reveal what you see. So this person sends it off to a colleague in China saying, here are the bones and meat of what you want, spelled meat, M-E-E-T, and we didn't spell it right, but that's what he was saying. Then we have other ones where somebody said, I should be able to spring the whole set of primers to you if I can figure out how to get a dozen tubes of frozen DNA onto an airplane. The primers are used as a diagnostic test. This was not his to take. It belonged to the university that was supporting them and doing the research, and the taxpayers paid for the research. So what was seen to be happening is there some of these people were getting grants from the Chinese government, and as part of you're supposed to report outside sources of income. They were not reporting this, and as part of this grant, they were required to provide information to the government. There have been companies set up in China. People have done research. It's been taken to China, and people there have gotten patents on it. So, you know, I was telling your researcher who called me earlier, I said, it's not a great analogy, but it's like, suppose I wrote a book and I gave it to my editor at my publisher. And before they could even copyright it or anything, my publisher had some friend at some other organization or whatever, gave him the book, and somebody else published it and copyrighted it. You feel like, what can you do? It's not mine anymore. These are data that don't belong. These are data reagents, medical tests that do not belong to the people who have been stealing them. Mm-hmm. They belong to the institutions, the U.S. taxpayers. and they're gone.
And who alerted the FBI that this was happening?
You know, the FBI will never talk about their investigations. Hmm. I do know that one of the early things that happened, and I don't know if it was the first, people said it was the first, other people said no, it was an early thing, was there was a scientist who was caught at an airport with a suitcase full of hard drives full of data that he was trying to sneak off to China. I don't know how they knew that was in a suitcase, but that was kind of an alarming thing. Now, I also understand why Chinese scientists in the U.S. worry that they're going to be targeted, because there have been cases where people have been erroneously accused. And once you're accused, even if it's wrong, your life can be ruined. I mean, just ruined. So I understand that. But on the other hand, I also understand the point of view of the universities and the NIH who say, wait a minute, this does not belong to the people who are stealing it. And once it's gone, it's gone. I mean, it's like your best idea. You have this great idea for a story. You go tell your editor. Your editor tells his friend it's published by the New York Times. I mean, who knows? And then you say, wait a minute, that was my story. Well, too late. It's gone now.
Well, China has a long history of incentivizing intellectual property theft, right? So this should not be a surprise, should it?
Well, the problem is that this is a system of biomedical research that has always prided itself on trust and honesty and sharing, and that doesn't mean that trust hasn't been breached. I mean, I can think of examples in the U.S. where people have taken nothing to do with China, just within the U.S., where people have taken somebody else's ideas that they saw in a grant proposal, even though it's a felony to do this, and gone ahead and tried to develop them themselves. So it's not like, you know, it never happens. But the system it's hard to have a system like ours and put the kind of controls in place that would prevent this. I mean, there are ideas for how to do it, and they make a lot of sense, but they're going to change the system.
Mm. So were some of the scientists trying to cover up what they were doing, saying, oh, I'm just taking a vacation, you know, and bring over material with them?
They were saying things like, this is totally unfair, I didn't do anything, or I didn't know that I wasn't allowed to do this. They have lawyers who say they're totally innocent. Mm-hmm. Some of them, you know, who were under suspicion just went off to China and established labs there. So they're gone. But others have lawyers who say, wait a minute, you know, they didn't do anything wrong. And maybe they didn't. See, that's the other thing. People say, well, why don't we have all the names? And we do have due process in this country. And it takes a long time to do an investigation and get an indictment and get a conviction. And I understand why the universities and the FBI are being very careful about releasing these people's names. Some people identified themselves. Mm. They went off to China. They identified themselves and said, I didn't do anything, I'm being accused. But those who are still under investigation, there's quite a few of them, I understand why their names and all the details about them are not released.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to the phones, 844-724-8255. Tom in Castor Valley, California. Hi, welcome, Tom.
Yes, hi. I just wanted to ask, on individual, you know, NPR programs and in the news, different things keep popping up about, you know, China stealing this, China, you know, counterfeiting that, China doing that. And, you know, there's stuff happening out here in California and Silicon Valley, you know, and universities that have research grants with our large companies. Autonomous vehicles is another area. Where when we look at these events one-on-one, but then you spread it over, you know, many, many, many different things, one starts to wonder about the entire relationship with China and whether a single trade agreement is going to resolve any of this. Mm-hmm. You know, what are the answers to on a broader, you know, to apply the what your guest is saying is happening in one area to, you know, the broader intellectual property theft across mm-hmm. companies and universities nationwide.
That's a really good point. And I was told that as you pointed out, it's not just the biomedical field. I'm a medical reporter, so that was, so it was, I went after the medical, I looked into the medical field, but the National Science Foundation, the Office of Science and Technology, everybody is concerned about this, and everybody's asking, what are we supposed to do? I don't think that anybody, people have, once I said, like I said, they have recommendations, they have advice, but I don't think we have a policy in place that would stop any of this yet.
So do you think the discussion about this is going to stifle then the intellectual discourse that scientists have with each other?
Are you asking me?
Yeah.
Aaron, you're your guest. Well, actually, some of the ideas are not, I can't imagine them stifling things, but they would prevent some of the thefts. For example, if you are reviewing a grant proposal, mm-hmm. You can only do it if you're using a secure computer and you are not allowed to copy anything you see, print anything you see. You sit in a room and you read it. Now, you might remember it, you might take notes, but it's going to be a little bit harder to hand it off after that. There's at MD Anderson, they got rid of things like thumb drives and stuff, so you can't so easily download stuff and pass it on. But you know, it's hard because science is a collaborative enterprise. I can't imagine that they would put controls in place that would prevent researchers from talking to each other, collaborating with each other, cooperating with each other, sharing reagents when everybody understands that that's what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And that even includes people in China. I mean,
yeah.
It doesn't mean, just because you're in China doesn't mean you're trying to steal something for the government.
Mm-hmm. And there are how many cases? Hundreds of cases of potential bad behavior?
Being investigated. See, that doesn't mean it's going to go farther. Maybe they'll find out it was a mistake.
And
I want to be fair to the people who are being investigated.
And to be fair, it may not only be Chinese who are.
Well, what they told me, I said, well, what other countries?
Yeah.
And they said, basically, it just keeps coming back to China. We haven't seen it with other countries so far.
So far. Let's go to the phones to Alex in New York. Hi, Alex.
Hi.
Go ahead.
Yeah, so I actually want to just share a quick story. My aunt was working for Brown University back in the 90s. And, you know, her very close coworker was involved in something like this. You know, they had worked together for many, many years, and the co-worker's husband was also a retired scientist, and he got involved in something similar to this, where he was leaking a lot of this research back to, you know, folks that he had in contact with. And you know, his wife, my aunt's co-worker, she got in a lot of trouble. This was back in the 90s. So this has been going on for a while, and, you know, unfortunately, it's basically human nature that we're dealing with. You know, it's happening in all verticals, not just research.
Okay. So where do we go with this, Gina? Are we going to see prosecution, indictments coming down the line?
Well, probably, but they haven't. There have been a few. They haven't involved NIH-funded research, but they have involved people who are doing biomedical research and were getting funds in other ways. But the NIH things are still winding their way through, because you go from a university finding something that concerns them. They send it to the NIH. The mm-hmm. NIH investigates. They send it to the Office of Inspector General. The Office of Inspector General investigates. If they think it's a crime was committed, they send it to the FBI. Then the FBI looks at it, and then it can go to a grand jury. I mean, it does take a while, and it hasn't been that much time yet, and not that much time yet has passed.
Mm-hmm. Are we fearful? You mentioned this a little bit in passing, that the hoping that it doesn't turn into a racial issue for all researcher who might be Chinese, for example.
Well, I think that what I heard is a lot of people who are of Chinese ethnicity mm-hmm. worry about that. I do trust, I only because I've known them probably as long as I've known you, Ira, mm-hmm. some of the people at the NIH who say, look, we don't know the ethnicity of the person we're investigating. We see what it looks like a transgression, and then we find the person. And if you trust them, then you have to, and I do, then you'd have to say, yeah, well, it's not that they're going after Chinese. There's so many Chinese scientists anyway. If you started going after them and looking at everything they do, you could never go, you couldn't get anywhere.
I'm Ira Flatow. This is Science Friday from WNYC Studios. Talking with Gina Colata, medical reporter for the New York Times, about espionage in universities and intellectual property. Do you think universities are going to be cracking down or be in giving more secrecy to what they're doing or trying to keep it private?
I think what they're going to be doing, and once again, I think universities don't want to talk too openly about this because they're so afraid of being accused of racial profiling. Mm. But I think what they're doing, what they might be doing, is some of the things that MD Anderson at least admits that they're doing. And some of the things that they're doing is, like I said, they got rid of when you travel, you can't just take your normal laptop.
Right.
They don't have any external hard drives. They got rid of their thumb drives. They have so much security. They showed me some redacted emails, and boy, were they heavily redacted. And it was in a system called Box. They gave me a password to look at these things. And of course, I didn't know the names of anybody, and boy, there was a lot of black on those pages. But anyway, in order to get into Box, I got to have a password and get in and look at this stuff. I couldn't copy it. I couldn't print it or anything. And then my password expired. So I went and looked at it again. I had to say, wait a minute, I can't get back into Box. I had to get another password. It doesn't even last long. It was so secure. You feel like, you know, it would be very hard to export anything unless you just sat there manually writing down everything you saw.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're very happy that you could take time to be with us today and to always continue your great work. And as a medical reporter, always following your stuff. Thank you, Gina.
Well, thank you, Ira. It's always good to talk to you. Thanks for having me on the show.
You're welcome.